have Pascal's wager first, and then the very next page is evidence for God's existence. Now, keep in mind, we talked about worldviews, what a worldview is. A worldview is a different way, you know, the way that a person views reality. And we talked about several different worldviews. Right now we're talking about Christian theism. Christian theism. And somebody tell me what theism means. Right, the belief in a personal God. Okay? So, under theism, you know, we have Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. So, last week we talked about some of the different presuppositions or different core beliefs of the Christian worldview. Okay? A little bit later, we're going to argue that the Christian worldview is true, or that theism is the true worldview. Okay? And then we're going to say why Christian theism is the true type of theism as opposed to Islam and Judaism. Now, this is not a course on world religions. So, you know, we can't spend a few hours on going into what Judaism is and a few hours into what Islam is and then spend several hours defending the Christian faith against them. We're just dealing with general worldviews. But I do think we need to spend a little bit of time on that. That's something that Sire doesn't do in his book. He's mainly focused in, you know, he zeroes in on Christian theism. What matters to him is kind of the worldview, the particular worldviews that have dominated the thought of Western culture throughout the centuries. Okay? So he goes from Christian theism to deism. We'll talk a little bit about, in fact, maybe I think what I'll do right now, you might want to just grab one of those papers and then just turn it to the back and just get a blank sheet of paper. And I just want to show you what Sire does. It's his own historical approach to worldviews, okay? And he starts with Christian theism. Because starting at about 315, 325 A.D., okay, when the Emperor Constantine professed faith in Christ, and then you had the great church theologian Augustine who arrived on the scene about a generation later. From that point on, the Christian worldview became the dominant. Christian theism became the dominant worldview in Western civilization, okay? And so Sire starts out after an introductory chapter, he goes into Christian theism, okay? And it's kind of like this. It is no... It is not a coincidence that modern science was founded while Christian theism was the dominant worldview of Western civilization, okay? You see, because even though the ancient Greeks could do scientific investigation, okay, they could never be totally confident that they were really finding out real information, real truths about the world that existed outside their minds. In fact, there really wasn't there was no way they could be sure there was even a world, physical world, outside their minds. Okay? I mean, their senses told them that there's a world, a physical world outside their minds, but, you know, maybe they could be wrong. So, but within the Christian worldview, you have the belief that a personal, rational God created human beings in His image, so we are rational, and then, you know, we are thinking beings, and then He created a universe in an orderly way so that through our God-given reason, we could really find out about the universe in which we live, Okay? So it's kind of like, because of Christian theism, we fell in love with this gift called reason that God gave to us, our thinking ability, our ability to think and to know and to investigate and to find truths out about the world in which we live. Okay? So we began to have this love fest with reason, this gift from God. Okay? What eventually happened, though, okay, you know, you human beings, you know, when was this church founded? Anybody know? Anybody knows? I founded a church in 1988, and it's still a Bible-believing, Bible-preaching church. 200-300 years from now, unless there's a reform movement, a back-to-the-Bible movement, every generation, you know, it's going to be an apostate church, like so many churches are. And so so you need a back-to-the-Bible movement every generation, because whatever man puts his hands on, he tends to destroy, okay? And it was the same with the gift that God had given us in human reason. Eventually, we started thinking that, you know, through human reason, rather than realizing it's the Bible and God's revealed truth, the truth that He's revealed to us that opens up the floodgates for us to receive more truth, it's kind of, we fell in love with the gift, we forgot about the gift giver, okay? And then we thought that we were so high and mighty that through human reason, we could start, you know, through human reason, we could solve any problem, find all truth, through technology, save the planet, whatever. But we almost deified human reason. It's what is called modernism, okay? But we got to the point where we thought that our human reason was so high and mighty we could start finding mistakes in the Bible. And if something in the Bible didn't quite make sense to us, didn't sit well, if we thought, you know, my reason tells me Jonah in the belly of a fish, that sounds like a fairy tale. So we started, we forgot that human reason was a gift from God, okay? And really, to be totally honest, you throw out the existence of a personal God, given enough time, you end up with, there's no such thing as truth. You know, we talked about that last week. And if you follow that to its logical conclusion, then there's also no morality, no meaning, and you end up with nihilism. Life just isn't worth living. Okay? And that, in the end, those are the options. Either God or life isn't even worth living. But whatever the case, this led to deism. And we're going to be talking about these two worldviews tonight. But theism was the idea that, you know, big heavy emphasis on man's reason, but we started de-emphasizing God. So, okay, yeah, God does exist, but He's really not relevant. Okay? God really does exist, but, you know, He doesn't perform miracles. Only a moron would believe in miracles. And we're educated men. We're the Thomas Jefferson type deist and all. We're going to take all the miracles out of the Bible and that type of thing. And so the focus was taken off of God, put on reason to the point where God does not intervene. Okay? And so you end up, you know, all of a sudden you go from this personal God who does matter, okay, who is involved in our lives, who can intervene and perform miracles, and all of a sudden, Western culture now becomes deistic, where all of a sudden, we still acknowledge the existence of God, but among the intellectual leadership of Western culture, He doesn't really matter. He's a God that doesn't perform miracles, a God that doesn't intervene, a God that created the universe and left it alone. So reason, human reason, is everything.
So we simply know Him as creator. We don't know Him as
Yeah, and it's even worse than that, because he's a creator who split. Okay, he's a creator. He created the world, set the natural laws in motion, and then just left it alone. And we'll talk about deism later, but basically what happened was we went from a personal God that really matters to an irrelevant God, okay? And the consequence of that was naturalism or atheism, that only the material world exists, okay? See, once you make God irrelevant, then what's the difference between the irrelevant God of deism and atheism? There is no God. For practical purposes, there really isn't any difference. And so, Western thought, you know, under Christian theism, well, we can trust reason, our thinking ability, because it's a gift from God, though it's limited and it's fallible. It went from that to where we almost worshipped reason. We forgot all about the gift giver. We fell in love with the gift, human reason. So we started kicking God out, okay, of the universe. It became an irrelevant God. And the next thing you know, naturalism begins to become the reigning thought among leaders in Western civilization. Now, with the atheism, there is no God. You end up with two camps, okay? The optimistic camp and the pessimistic camp. See, what Sire is doing in his book, he does this throughout his book. I wish he drew this diagram. I had to invent a diagram, but it's all based on his thought and my creativity, so it's kind of a good combination of it. But whatever the case, he's explaining why we trashed Christian theism for deism, and why we trashed deism for naturalism or atheism. And, you know, by explaining this historically, he takes us right up to today and says, this is where we are, guess where we're going to be tomorrow. And I think he gives us some really good insights there. There's no handout for that, so just take the back of the page and work on that. Some of the optimistic, atheistic worldviews were like Marxism. As bleak as Karl Marx's picture of the world was, he believed that we could, and in fact we could speed up the process through revolution, but eventually we would have a utopian, classless society. Okay, so that's an optimistic view. Okay, secular humanism. And humanist, it makes a religion out of atheism. Secular humanism, in humanist manifestos, number one and number two, one written 1933, one 1973, now there's Humanist Manifesto 2000. But they basically say no deity will save us, we must save ourselves. So it throws God right out the window. But then these guys are so optimistic that they think that these atheist thinkers can bring about a one-world government, one-world socialistic government, and solve all the world's problems, poverty and war and things of that sort. Okay, so that's optimistic. When you're an atheist, you know, I believe there's no God, and if enough of us intellectuals band together, we can save the planet. That's not really consistent, but they're still around. Paul Kurtz and his guys are still around. I got to meet quite a few of them. Michael Morris is a secular humanist. Michael Martin, I should say. The guy that I debated. And now modernism, let me say that we're using, you know, some secular humanists are Marxists, okay? And Marxists, to a certain degree, are modernistic, though some would claim to be postmodernistic, but But secular humanism is kind of... Modernism gave birth to secular humanism. Well, what I'm pointing out is that atheism under any of these three names, Marxism, secular humanism, or modernism, says there is no God, but we can still save the planet. We should be optimistic. There is no God, but there's still hope. Okay? The problem with that is it really doesn't make any sense. Okay? And so the pessimistic view, the more consistent view of atheism, is nihilism, some call it nihilism. The idea that since there is no God, and I think this is the only consistent atheistic view, since there is no God, there's no life after death, there's no meaning in life, there's no such thing as right and wrong, there's no truth. And so then the big question comes from that. Well, if there's no meaning to life, if life isn't worth living, then why go on living? So French existentialist Albert Camus says that that's the only question that philosophers have to face. Why not suicide? Okay? And so that's the pessimistic view. Now the thing is, Friedrich Nietzsche was here, okay? He was probably the most consistent atheist whoever lived, as far as I'm concerned, of all the atheists that I've read, but he couldn't live with his nihilism. He said, look, if God does not exist, if God is dead, the truth is dead, moral values are dead, meaning in life is dead. But then he acknowledged that we need meaning in life, so we need a new myth. He believed that the fairy tale of Christianity had been dethroned, but now we need to resurrect a new myth. That's going to provide us with some sense of meaning in life. Through man's will to power, he wanted them to bring about a breed of supermen to bring about these hard values rather than the soft values of Christianity, which held back human evolution. So even Nietzsche knew that you can't remain a nihilist. You got to go somewhere from that. Okay? I mean, to be consistent with nihilism, you wouldn't even get out of bed in the morning. You wouldn't get washed. You wouldn't brush your teeth. You wouldn't go and work or go for a walk through the park. So even the pessimistic atheist, the nihilist, had to try to escape from their despair. Okay? And the escape from nihilism is called existentialism. Okay. Now the Apostle Paul quoted a Greek poet and said, if the dead are not raised, the Greek poets didn't say if the dead are not raised, but he said, if the dead are not raised, and then he quoted the Greek poets, if the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Okay? So, you know, nihilism, it's like, oh man, there's no escape. If nihilism is true, you ought to just wallow in despair. But because man can't stay there, the atheist man became an existentialist, many of the leading thinkers. Existentialism teaches that, yes, the nihilists are right. There is no truth, there's no meaning in life, there's no right and wrong, but we need these things. So let's take a leap of blind faith by an act of the will, a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm, and self-actualize ourselves, create meaning for our lives. Okay, because we can't live without it. Okay, and so to escape from despair that led to existentialism over here. Okay, now meanwhile, on the optimistic side of atheism, modernism, the idea that through human reason, there's no God, and through human reason, we can solve all our problems, save the planet, live happily ever after. There was a reaction against this. This is a tough one. And the reaction against it is called postmodernism. Although, some would argue, like Thomas Oden, a theologian at Drew University in New Jersey. Some refer to postmodernism as ultra-modernity, and what he basically means is that postmodernism isn't really a reaction against modernism, it's actually the next stage of modernism. But whatever the case, we'll view it in this course mainly as a reaction against modernism. But modernism was the idea that there is no God, but through human reason we can solve all our problems, find all truth. Okay? That's the modernist project failed so miserably. Okay? That not only could we not find all truth and solve all of our problems, it became questionable as to whether we could find any truth at all. If there's no God, how could we find any truth? We began to even question truth itself. And then for every cure for a disease that we found through human reason, we also figured out different ways to blow the planet up. So the modern project failed, and you end up with postmodernism. We'll talk about postmodernism later. Right now, just think of it as a reaction against modernism, and it's something that comes after modernism. We'll spend an hour or two on that later on in the course. But you can see that whether we view atheism in the optimistic side or the pessimistic side, it failed and it gave way. Whether it was a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm to existentialism, or whether it's the postmodernist acknowledging that man is a product of his community and that there is no truth and all we have are narrative stories. So we need to gather around the narrative, the story of our community. But in both of these cases, by the way, what you have, both postmodernism and existentialism, as well as nihilism, you have the acknowledgement that if there is no God, and they assume there's no God, then there's no such thing as truth. Okay? And by the way, going through all of this, you can still have a high percentage of Christians in Western culture, a high percentage of deists and all. What I'm talking about, and what Sire's talking about, the leading thinkers, kind of those who control the media, those who control the universities, those who control the governments, the people who are kind of leading Western civilization, okay? And, you know, if the highest percentage of your people are born-again Christians, but the leaders, the movers and the shakers are atheists, they're gonna bring that civilization down. And God shows a tremendous amount of grace when there is a strong believing remnant. But we're talking about the people who are guiding Western culture. And obviously they're leading us down the wrong path. Now, yeah.
Can you give us some examples, maybe modern day examples of each of those things, existentialism and postmodernism?
Yeah, I could give a little bit of examples. Like with existentialists, you have like Jean-Paul Sartre. Some would say pronounce Sartre, which is like the proper way to pronounce it, but in France, all his buddies just call him Sartre. So I think the French guys didn't pronounce the last part, but he basically just believed there is no God, okay? And since there's no God, there's no meaning in life, no truth, no morality. But we have to stand for something. We've got to create meaning for our lives. So it's like Christianity is true. Human beings are like checks, and God fills out the checks. So
is that like a
defense? No, we'll get to that in just a minute. That's New Age. And the existentialist, in Sartre's case, human beings start life as a blind check. We fill in our own checks. See, in Sartre's view, if God exists, humans have no freedom. And he starts out, well, man is free. We have a free will. Therefore, God doesn't exist. So Sartre would agree with the hyper-Calvinist, who, you know, and very few of them are around, but the hyper Calvinists would believe that Lucifer fell because God made him fall, Adam and Eve fell because God made them fall, and that we're robots, okay? Most Calvinists don't fall in that category. Calvin didn't, Luther didn't, Augustine didn't, okay? But they would say, because God is free, man is not free. Sartre would agree with them, but then Sartre would say, but man is free, therefore there's no God. Okay? And but he believes that we're free to fill in the check. We are blank checks, we fill them in ourselves, so we actualize ourselves by an act of the will. Okay? Now, the only difference between existentialism here and postmodernism even gives up, at least with the existentialist, okay? The existentialist still has this, in modernism you have the rational individual trying to find truth, and when that rational individual can't find truth, they go to the nihilist camp, and then if they choose to get out, they escape through existentialism, but it's still an individual. Postmodernist camp is such a radical reaction to modernism that even the individual can't be trusted. So forget about you trying to take a leap of blind faith on your own, because really there's no you other than how you are defined by your community or your culture. So a human being, so not only with postmodernism, not only does it follow, okay, no God, therefore no truth, no morality, no meaning, but also there's no individual self. All of a sudden you get swallowed up by the community. Okay? And that's why there's so much emphasis today on the gay community. The gay rights community, the women's lib community, the pro-abortion community. But yeah, this camp is so radical, that postmodernist camp, that even history loses objective meaning. So you can deconstruct a book like the Bible or a history textbook so that it means what the readers, what the each community interprets a book or a history book or the Bible itself in light of their own story, the narrative that gathers together their community. So to the gay community, Jesus Christ becomes the greatest homosexual activist who ever lived. To the Marxist community, Jesus is called liberation theology. Jesus Christ becomes the greatest Marxist revolutionary who ever lived. And, you know, you could see, I mean, in Nicaragua, they had in textbooks for little children, for kindergarten, first and second graders, explaining how, you know, Jesus came to set the poor free. And instead of having Jesus with arms outstretched on a cross, he's holding a Russian-made AK-47 assault rifle. And they have their own kind of a mockery of the Nicene Creed that the kids would recite, which would talk about Fidel Castro, Sandino, and somebody else was thrown in there, but even Marx is thrown in there, and they've got their own false trinity and all, but it's fairy tales. But the postmodernist believes that's all we have. There is no truth. All that's left are stories. And whoever tells the most powerful narrative that catches a person, you know, people's passions and their will, those are going to be the people that are going to rule. Yeah?
What Christian religions have a postmodernistic view? Where some churches out there?
It's a good question. It's a tough one to answer. The question was, which Christian denominations or churches have a postmodern view? Let me just say this, the liberal church, the church that has gone away from what the Bible has taught and denies that Jesus is God, denies salvation through him, okay, they went more in the deistic camp, okay? And but then as time went on, still trying to retain belief in God, they ended up, many went into the existential camp, and they're referred to not as liberal Christians, but as neo-Orthodox Christians, where the Bible contains the Word of God, it becomes the Word of God to us at a moment of crisis when we encounter God in the Scriptures. At the same time, you can't put that encounter into words. It's beyond reason. And so the Karl Barth and the Neo-Orthodox movement is an example there. But what you find is that liberal Christians, liberal with a small L, liberal Christians are always trying to update their Christianity to make it more appealing to their culture. And so what happens is with liberal Christians, when the culture is deistic, guess what? They're pretty deistic. When it goes atheistic, then you even get in the 1960s, you had a God is dead movement within the church. Paul Tillich was referred to as, he said, God is beyond being, as the ground of all being, God is beyond being. And so people began to refer to him as a Christian atheist. A.J. Altazar was part of that movement. To this day, the World Council of Churches is very liberal. They have backed just about every major Marxist communist overthrow of any country throughout the world. But because at this point, postmodernism is the cool thing to do, both postmodernism and in other circles, New Age thinking, you'll find many of the extremely liberal churches today either being postmodern, where you walk into the church and it's nothing but a hotbed of political correctness, where one-third of the congregation are gay activists, another one-third are radical pro-abortionists, you know, and God only knows what the other one-third are. But then a lot of these, see, the problem that the liberal churches have is the premise there seems to be, well, our gospel is so unpopular, why don't we change it to make it popular with our culture? Okay? You know, it's called accommodation. But the fact of the matter is, Jesus said the gospel was never going to be popular. So, I mean, if you really want to, you know, let's take Crossroads Bible Church and make it, you know, really popular with the world. Okay? What you do is you get rid of the pulpits and you build a bar. You start serving alcohol and that type of stuff. I mean, you'll start bringing in a lot of people and it'll become real popular and stuff. But is that still the gospel? No. And, if Jesus' goal was to be popular, and if the goal of the apostles was to be popular, these guys were the biggest failures in the history of mankind, because all they did was they got themselves dead the hard way. Okay? You do not crucify politically correct people. And political correctness is a baby of postmodernism, which basically presupposes that we already know the right political views, and anybody who disagrees with us is automatically a bigot. And we don't even dialogue on the subject. We just call names. Okay? And so when you're watching the news, the 6 o'clock news, and they just say that, the president or some political guy did something that so happens it turns out to be constitutional, and they just shake their head and roll their eyes, that's political correctness. It's assumed, you know, hey, look, 95% of professors in college universities are pro-abortion. So the debate's over. So that's like political correctness. There really is no room for debate. Rational dialogue is thrown out the window. And if you're in control, more power to your community. So I don't know if I can give, like, particular names for, for secular humanist Paul Kurtz and his colleagues, and they're also, it's almost interchangeable with modernism. They'd be, you know, so basically an optimistic atheist is somebody who thinks atheism is true, but there's still hope for the planet Earth. And you still get your Marxist, but Marxism is supposed to be dead. But the so-called capitalism of Europe looks incredibly like socialism, which is almost identical to communism, and the supposed capitalism here in America. As we get taxed more and more and government gets bigger and bigger, it's looking more and more like Marxism. I mean, all you have to do is read Marx and Engels, the Communist Manifesto, and look at their 10 goals, 10 ways to move countries towards communism. You know, graduated income tax, you know, control, government control of the public schools. You know, you go right down the list, and it's like, we're just about there. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk about Marxism a little bit later. But an example of deists were Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. Okay, and Jefferson cut all the miracles out of the Bible, out of the New Testament. It's called the Thomas Jefferson Bible. So he believed the Bible was the greatest book ever written on morality and the principles of morality and government, but it was all based on human reason. These miracles didn't really happen. It wasn't revelation from God, because he believed in, you know, the God that disappears, creates the world and disappears. Now, the problem here is that with this leap of blind faith through existentialism, you had guys like Dr. Timothy Leary out of Harvard, you mentioned last week, that we're saying, you know, it's just so hard to take that leap of blind faith through natural means, so he wanted to do it artificially through LSD trips. The Beatles said, hey, this guy's right on. They read his stuff, and they started promoting the use of hallucinogenic drugs, and it wasn't to escape reality. It was their attempt to find a higher reality. So a leap of blind faith through hallucinogenic drugs. Well, this began to open up people's minds in the 1960s so that they had experiences that were very common with experiences that were Eastern gurus from India and other countries were reporting as they were coming into America. And so existentialism eventually gave way to Eastern pantheism. Remember, pantheism is the belief that God is the universe, okay? And God is the universe, God is impersonal, an impersonal force, and since man is part of the universe, man is part of God, and so man can call himself God, okay? But, you know, there's some things with Eastern pantheism, like the view that the physical world is an illusion. That's, you know, that's a bummer when Americans want to drive their BMWs. So we made a few changes on it, and we use kind of Christian terminology, even though we started accepting Eastern pantheistic thought. So basically it gave way to New Age pantheism. And so this is where we are today as a culture. This is why Christian books on the New Age movement don't sell well anymore, okay? Because the New Age movement is not a big thing that is hitting our culture. The New Age type of thinking, neo-pagan type of thinking, is American culture. If you want to go and find counterculture people now, you don't go to somebody who's worshiping a rock or standing on the beach with Shirley MacLaine screaming, "I am God, I am God, I am God." If you want to find somebody who's countercultural, all you got to do is look in this room. We are now the radicals. Okay? If we were not the radicals, we would be, you know, portrayed in much better light on CNN. Okay? You know, I laugh when I watch the Animal Planet and they got a pet psychic, you know, and all. But the sad thing is, there's more people laughing at me in America today than laugh at her. She makes a lot more money than your pastor does. Okay? So the people who are throwing out this stuff, Mikhail Gorbachev is talking a New Age message now. God is the universe, worship the earth. And, you know, that guy, we think he's a has-been. No, he's the highest paid speaker on earth, $100,000 for every 30 minutes of talking. Which means we couldn't even afford to have him come in and sneeze on a microphone. Okay? 30 minutes of talking, $100,000. So we laugh, and rightfully so, because it's foolishness what these people are spouting. But the fact of the matter is, they're the ones who are receiving the big audiences and the wide acceptance. Not us. So this is where we're at today. New Age pantheism on kind of the more emotional, superstitious side, okay? But on the other side, on the intellectual side, it's postmodernism. And they share a lot of things in common. There's the traditional God is dead, okay? There's no such thing as truth, no such thing as morality. Okay, so they share certain things in common, but there are some differences. I am of the belief, and the reason why I'm drawing this as a dotted line from postmodernism to New Age pantheism is because we don't know where postmodernism is going to go. But postmodernism is almost like an anti-worldview, a non-worldview. It attacks everybody else's view of reality, but it doesn't present you with anything positive to replace it. So it seems to me that postmodernism is not here to stay. It has to give way. By the way, getting back to your question on postmodernism, there are some evangelical churches that are now jumping on the postmodern bandwagon. What's that? You know, it's really... No, the Health Wealth Ministries, you could trace their roots back all the way back to E.W. Kenyon,
right,
who was trying to grab what he thought was good out of the mind science cults. Well, the mind science cults, Mary Baker Eddy, Christian Science, the Fillmores, Unity School of Christianity, Religious Thought, all these metaphysical groups, they were getting their ideas from Eastern pantheism. So a blending of Eastern pantheism and Christianity is the health, wealth, and prosperity heresy. But we actually have evangelical churches which have been pretty solid. Stanley Grenz is really downplaying propositional truth, statements of truth, doctrinal truth of scriptures, and he believes that the community is the hermeneutic of the scriptures. What he means is each community interprets the Bible for themselves. And so if you want to see what kind of inroads postmodernism is making in evangelical circles, Miller J. Erickson's book, published by Baker Bookhouse, Postmodernizing the Faith. Postmodernizing the Faith by Miller J. Erickson, you'll see. And it is affecting several churches in the Seattle area. If you'd like to talk to me about that later on, yeah, we can do that stuff. I don't know Jason here real well, but just getting to know him, seems like a brilliant guy. But I do know James Hansen. James Hansen is one of the most brilliant full-time ministers in the Seattle area when it comes to postmodernism, what's good about it and what's bad about it. There's some other brilliant ministers in the Seattle area that I think are giving in too much to postmodernism. No, James Hansen is a strong, solid roadblock or dam holding back a lot of the floodwaters of postmodernists that thought in. There are younger pastors in the area that are jumping on the postmodern bandwagon. They see postmodernism as primarily a good thing. And James Hansen is one of the few guys that has thoroughly studied postmodernism and has seen it for what it is. So no, James is a good guy. He's a terribly needed good guy, because there's some guys that love the Lord that are being led astray and leading others astray. And James is doing a lot of good work there. So basically, this is an outline of Sayer's book, where he deals with